A man in shadows and a reporter with the deadliest weapon of all, the power of the press.
The cover-up had little to do with Watergate. It was mainly to protect the covert operations. It leads everywhere. Get out your notebook. There's more.
That's a clip from the 1976 movie All the President's Men. These days, newspapers are floundering. So why are the presses still rolling on the silver screen? Hello, sweetheart. Get me rewrite. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Friday, April 24th. I'm Catherine Lanfer in for John Hockenberry. Adora Udoji is away with her new baby, so our good friend Todd Zwillick is here. Hey, good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Catherine. Coming up this hour, is Pakistan simply fighting for survival right now? And the nation's biggest banks get their government-issued report cards today. We'll talk about who's on the honor roll and who's headed to summer school. Those stories coming up. But first, these headlines.
The latest government memo to Chrysler, get your bankruptcy papers in order. Our partners at the New York Times say the Treasury has told Chrysler to prepare a Chapter 11 filing as early as next week. That's as Chrysler is coming up against an April 30th deadline to develop a viable business plan. One possible bright spot for Chrysler retirees, the Treasury has worked out a deal with the UAW that protects health care benefits and pensions if Chrysler goes under. And GM has confirmed it's shutting down production at 13 plants this summer. GM's North American president, Troy Clark, says they simply have too many cars.
Our goal is to reduce inventory levels from the 767,000 units that we have in the field today to approximately 525,000 by the end of July.
GM will stagger the closings over 11 weeks and halt production on all but its most popular models. GM has not said how many workers will be affected.
The Justice Department has ordered the release of more than 40 photos depicting prisoner abuse by U.S. personnel in Iraq and Afghanistan. The ACLU says the photos will prove that prisoner abuse is widespread. The Bush administration had refused to release those photos. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner outlines the administration's plans to clean up the U.S. banking system today. Geithner will meet with members of the G7 ahead of World Bank and IMF meetings in D.C. this weekend. In Pakistan, government officials are telling the Taliban militants to retreat from their stronghold in the Swat Valley. There are signs that militants have done so.
This morning, we'll have the latest numbers on durable goods and new home sales. The Dow and the S&P are flat. The Dow opens at 79.57. The S&P starts trade at 8.52. Now, President Obama is pushing Congress to write new rules for the credit card industry. But hey, you can do better than that. What's your gripe?
I think that late payment fees are a real scam. I've been sending my payments to find out that if it arrives on a Saturday or a Sunday, that they will charge you even though it's due on Monday if they haven't opened your envelope. Each time that's happened to me, I've called and they have removed the interest accrued because of it.
We still want to hear your stories about being credit crunched. What have the companies done to you? And what tips do you have for everyone else? Come on, tell us your stories. 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
I'm Catherine Lanfer in for John Hockenberry, joined this morning by Todd Zwillick. Hey, Todd.
Good morning.
Big question this morning. What kind of survival war should Pakistan be fighting? We had news yesterday, Taliban fighters securing their hold in Bunair. It's territory less than 70 miles from the capital city of Islamabad. Now we have some tentative reports this morning that maybe those fighters are withdrawing. But the question still remains. U.S. officials are very concerned about the Pakistani government's willingness to take on the insurgents. In fact, earlier this week, both Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton warned of the consequences if Pakistan didn't take a firmer stand against the Taliban. In fact, listen to this quote from Hillary Clinton.
We cannot underscore the seriousness of the existential threat posed to the state of Pakistan that are being made by a loosely confederated group of terrorists and others who are seeking the overthrow of the Pakistani state.
We're joined now by Ambassador Munir Akram. He was Pakistan's ambassador to the United Nations from 2002 to 2008. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's go back to this essential question. What kind of fight for survival is Pakistan fighting these days?
Well, we are fighting against militancy, but it's not an existential threat, and it is not a fight for survival. We have the capacity to defeat these militants, but we would not like to make war on our own people. And if it can be resolved peacefully, it should be resolved peacefully. So I believe that the threat, which is real and it's a matter for concern for us, but this should not be blown out of proportion, and it should be seen that we need a clear strategy. We need a strategy which has the support of our people in order to defeat militancy, and we have to be allowed the time and space to develop that strategy and implement it.
You know, you say that you don't want to have a fight against your own people, but there have been private citizens, private militias who have stood up to the Taliban. So obviously that fighting's already going on.
Well, there are several. It's a very complex situation. It's not the same in every region. But keep in mind that the area that is affected is about 2 to 3% of our total land territory. It's very mountainous and huge valleys. And we have to reestablish control, but we can do it through either peaceful means, political negotiations, or we can do it through militancy. Different tactics are applied in different places. If the militants are agreeable to have peace through political negotiations, we should aim for that, obviously, and we are doing so. But when they are militants which are bent upon violence against Pakistan, for example, in Bajor, our army has taken very strong action. And there is also evidence that in some areas there is foreign interference in the militancy, and we will take action against foreign interference. But if there are local militias, local people that we can negotiate peace with, we can bring them around, even over the long term, I think we should be allowed to do that and not make war on our own people. And this, and such violence against our own people does not have the support of the general population of Pakistan. We need the support of the population in order to follow any strategy.
Ambassador, their ambitions are local. Yesterday, they were 70 miles away from Islamabad. What if local includes Islamabad?
No, this is the exaggeration. You're sitting from here looking at satellite pictures. 70 miles is long ways away. These are mountains. These are huge mountains and valleys. These guys are not just going to march down in Islamabad.
I think if anyone has the capability to get across those mountains, it would be those particular insurgents.
Yes, but, you know, we have a huge army. We can utilize the
army.
Why
is that army on the border with India instead of worrying about the Taliban?
No, that's not true. Our army is over 500,000 troops. We've got plenty of troops.
But the fighting has been left to a force of constables, and you have officials in this country very upset.
That's not true. The fighting has been left to people who know the area. These are the frontier corps. They are from the region. You cannot fight in the mountains with people who don't know the terrain, have never fought in that area. So we have the right people in there. We don't have the equipment because the United States has not given us the equipment. All the high technology, tracking, night vision, helicopters, we don't have that equipment. So we are fighting with one hand tied behind our back, even when we are fighting in Bajor. But we've done well when we have decided to fight. We have put it down. But the question is, we need the support of our people to have a fight. We're not going to launch into operations which do not have support. This agreement was negotiated by the regional government in Peshawar, and Pakistan is a federation. We have to be able to carry all the provincial governments with us. So, and this agreement in Swat was ratified by the parliament.
All right, Mr. Ambassador, you say there is no existential threat posed by these insurgents in Pakistan, but we just heard tape of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton using those very words.
I disagree with that.
And secretaries of state don't choose their words carefully. She said existential threat for a reason.
I choose my words very carefully. I'm from Pakistan, and she's not.
Okay, so but what do you make of her using those terms? Why would the American State Department and
because
American officials?
Obviously, the Americans do want us to take on these people and fight the militancy because they see that there is an impact on their presence in Afghanistan. And it's vice versa. The American presence in Afghanistan, the war against the Taliban, is pushing many of these extremists across the border, and we are expected to fight them. But we can only fight them if we have the support of our people. Our people see this war, a large proportion of our people see this war as America's war, not Pakistan's war. And they question as to why we should be fighting against our own people, bombing our territory, where the U.S. predators go and hit our people and kill civilians while they are trying to kill the terrorists. This has made this war very unpopular. It's made the army unpopular. It's made the government unpopular. And if we are pushed in this direction into pell-mell war against our own people, it will jeopardize our government. That's the existential threat we will face.
And what happens if members of Congress follow through on their threat to withhold non-military aid to Pakistan if this isn't stepped up?
You know, Pakistan can do without American aid. This is my honest opinion. Well, how much money, whatever money is committed, you know, half the aid comes back to the donors. There is, for so many years, you've promised aid. There is nothing has happened in the frontier, on the ground. There is no development that has taken place. Even if you commit the money now, it will come a year later with conditions and tie and all kinds of strings. It's not going to have a large impact on the ground. We can do without the aid because if we can't be seen as to be a stooge in this war for America.
You've received $1 billion in American military aid each year, and you're saying you can just let that go.
Military, $1 billion, we get compensation, not military aid. The military aid has been limited so far to $300 million, and it's been mostly used to buy little spare parts and things like that. It's the real assistance we've asked against in the war on terror. We've asked for helicopters. We've asked for night vision equipment. We've asked for tracking equipment, electronic tracking equipment. We have not been provided that for the last 3 years that we've been requesting it. Why not?
You know, I have to tell you, I'm just looking at the New York Times right here. It says the Army receives $1 billion in American military aid each year. So, again, this must be a language question. We're running out of time, and I want to give you an opportunity. If the military route is not the way here, what is the concrete thing that needs to happen for political stability to arrive in your country?
We need to pursue a strategy which is... which has a combination of political action with the militants. We need economic and social development. But where the militants are recalcitrant, where there is no hope of negotiating with them, then we need a military strategy and a police strategy and an intelligence strategy. We have in place. I'm not saying that these agreements are totally flawless. Yes, they could have been better. They could have been negotiated better. But for us, the first priority is to have the support of our people in this war. The second priority is not to kill our own people. And we have to look at the long term. We cannot, for a short-term gains, alienate a important province of Pakistan, the Pashtun. The people in the northwest frontier do not support this. Okay. We have to carry them along. We have to convince them that this
And Ambassador, I'm afraid that we have to carry ourselves to the end of this segment. I thank you so much for joining us. It was
thank
a pleasure
so
to
much,
talk
yeah.
to you. That's Ambassador Munir Akram, former permanent representative to the UN from Pakistan. You're listening to The Takeaway.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.